friends. Welcome back to the While We're Waiting Hope After Child Loss podcast. I'm Jill Sullivan, your host and one of the co-founders of the While We're Waiting ministry. This is a podcast of stories, stories of devastating loss and grief and heartbreak and struggle, and stories of hope and healing and faith and yes, even joy. Underlying every conversation is the hope we have in Jesus Christ, which makes it possible to not just survive the loss of a child, but to live well while we're waiting to see them again in heaven one day. You can learn more about our ministry and the free bereaved parent retreats we host by visiting our website at www.whilewerewaiting.org. Welcome to episode number 197. Before we get to today's guest, I want to put in a plug for an upcoming conference for bereaved parents in Lynchburg, Virginia. The Our Hearts, Our Home conference is scheduled for April 12 and 13 and includes an amazing panel of speakers, several of whom have been guests on this podcast. Gary and Laura House, Melanie DeSimone, Carol Brown, Hal and Elizabeth Barge, Lisa Thacker and her husband Kirk, along with a number of other amazing speakers. You can participate either in person or online, and registration information is available at ourheartsourhome.org/conference, and I will put that link in the show notes. The cost is very affordable, and there are even scholarships available if you're in need of that. I highly recommend you take advantage of this opportunity. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing you to my friend, Michelle Ferris, who I first met at a While We're Waiting weekend we hosted in Barrie, Illinois. Michelle is a single mom who tragically lost her only child, her son Corbin, on the 4th of July in 2020. Today, she shares Corbin's story with me, and we have a very open and honest discussion about her experiences as a single parent whose only child is in heaven. I know I have learned a lot from her, and I believe you will too. Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Hi, Jill. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I have been looking forward to having this conversation with you. So let's get started by giving you the opportunity to tell the listeners just a little bit about yourself. Tell us where you're from and what life is like for you there.
Sure. I live just outside of Lansing, Michigan. I grew up in northern Minnesota and moved to Michigan just before I started high school. So I've been in Michigan ever since. I work for the state of Michigan as a disability examiner, reviewing medical claims. Been there about 22 years now. And before that, I did, I worked with children in foster care. So I'm single. I've been divorced almost all of my son's life. And, you know, it's hard to think about the things that I enjoy doing with Corbin gone, but I do enjoy listening to music and spending time with my dog and taking him on walks, just spending time in nature, going up north in northern Michigan and just really enjoying God's beauty up there. So, and just connecting with other bereaved moms, you know, the last 3.5 years. So.
Yeah, we had the opportunity a few years ago to go to northern Michigan for a wedding in my family, and we got to explore a little bit, went to Mackinac Island and all that. I had no idea northern Michigan was so beautiful.
Yes, yeah, it is really beautiful. I mean, summertime, there's just a lot of people. Yeah, you don't realize, you don't have to go very far if you live here, but it's a nice place to visit.
Yeah, we'd like to go back one day. So I know you're the mom of Corbin. Help us get to know Corbin a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Corbin, he is my only child, and he was born in 2001. And I've always said, and I still say, that he was my sunshine. Me and his dad ended up divorcing, you know, within his first year of life. So it was mainly just me and Corbin his whole life. And Corbin, even though his dad was involved in his life, Corbin was the kind of person who would like to make people laugh, and he loved to joke around, and yet he had a kind of quiet, shy side to him as well, you know, growing up. But I enjoyed seeing him as he got older, you know, kind of coming out of his shell a little more and becoming more confident, I think. He played soccer when he was younger and tried a few other things, but, you know, wasn't super into athletics when he got to, he went to a Lutheran school growing up, up through eighth grade, and then he went to a public high school. He was involved in band, which was a great, awesome community for him to be involved in, especially going into a big high school that he didn't really know a lot of people. That was a nice opportunity, you know, that summer before when they had band camp for him to get to meet people and become friends. And so he ended up being on the drum line in the marching band, which he loved, and I, as his mom, loved watching.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's the best part of a marching band, I think.
Right? Yeah. Who doesn't love a marching band anyways? Line. But yeah, the drum line is exciting. So
yeah.
Let's see. He was also involved in robotics a couple years in high school, and he really enjoyed that. And he was just a really kind, good character type of kid, you know. He just liked to do things for others, but wouldn't really brag about it, and just, you know, help out people when he can, and just had a strong faith, you know, which I think his faith has helped me as well.
Sure.
And he loved tradition. You know, every summer we'd go on a trip with some other families, and, you know, Christmas traditions and things like that. He just, you know, I realized as he was growing up, when he would mention something, I'm like, oh, wow, that tradition really is important to you. So, yeah, which I think, you know, most people probably enjoy traditions. But, and we enjoyed, he enjoyed listening to music also and playing music a lot. And we went to a lot of Christian concerts together. And
yeah, I know that the two of you went to a lot of Toby Mac concerts together, right?
We did. Yeah. Toby Mac holds a special place for me and, you know, the memories that I have with Corbin. And yeah.
Yeah. We're big Toby Mac fans in our house too. So I've always enjoyed seeing your posts about Toby.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. Corbin is an unusual name. Is there a story behind his name?
Yeah. So before Corbin was born, me and his dad had seen this word in the Bible. And so it comes from the Bible, Corbin. And most people are like, I don't, you know, I don't remember that name in the Bible, but it's an actual, sure, like just a name of, it's not a name of a person. And it comes from Mark 7:11, and it means a gift devoted to God. And one explanation that I found says the word described something to be offered to God or given to the sacred treasury in the temple. So if something was Corbin, it was dedicated and set apart for God's use. So,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I just thought it was really special.
Yeah. Oh, I do too. So on the 4th of July in 2020, you all went to Lake Michigan for the day. How about you pick up the story from there?
Yeah. We had gone up north to my brother's cottage up in northern Michigan, which is about 3 hours from where we live. And we were just looking forward to a long weekend away, you know, especially since it was COVID and early on kind of in COVID, and we hadn't really gotten out much, you know, so it was just a beautiful time of year to be up there. And the day before, we had gone kayaking down the river with my family and friends and had a really nice day. It was a Friday on July 3rd, and then July 4th, my brother wanted to show us a trail that him and his wife had made through the woods across the road from their cottage, which leads out to Sleeping Bear Dunes, National Lakeshore, Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
So we did, you know, it was around noon, you know, we got up and around and went, we were going to go over there for just a little bit and then come back to the cottage and hang out on the river, which their cottage is on the Platte River. So we got to the, we got through the woods, and it was just kind of exhausting because it was hilly and it was really hot that day. But once we came out of the clearing and you see the beautiful Lake Michigan and the dunes, you know, it was worth it. Then we made our way down to the sandy dune part, and we were hot and tired, so we waded in the water, and my brother said, oh, there's a sandbar out there. And he asked if any of us wanted to go, and we said no, and Corbin said no, and there was a deep area before the sandbar, so my brother went out there, and he showed us how deep that area was, and then he came back, and then my sister-in-law and my brother went down the beach, just took a walk down the beach looking for rocks. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we're standing there, and a few minutes later, I'm standing with my friend, and Corbin says, does anybody want to go out in the water to the sandbar? And we're like, no. I thought it was odd because my brother had just asked and he said no. But so next thing we know, Corbin's on his way out there by himself, which I also thought was a little strange because Corbin wasn't a great swimmer, you know. And I hesitated for a minute, like, wait, do I stop him? Or, and I didn't. I let him go. And, you know, he was 19. And so he made his way out there to the sandbar. Mm-hmm. And then on the way back, like, he waved to us when he was out there. And then on the way back, he started to motion to us again. And we thought he was just like waving, saying, hey, you know, and we realized that that wasn't quite what he was doing. And we asked him if he was like, are you okay? And he shook his head no. And so then we yelled for my brother down the beach, like trying to motion for him and yell for him to come back, because the few of us that were standing there weren't able to get out to Corbin. So my brother came running and got into the water and made it to Corbin. But at that point, I think Corbin had been struggling so much, probably took in water, and he just wasn't able to hold on. My brother wasn't, you know, they weren't able to hold on to each other. So yeah, as I, you know, I saw Corbin come up and down 3 times, and then I didn't see him come up again. So it was, I couldn't believe, you know, it's just shock. I was pacing the beach and in and out of the water, pacing, and I just kept repeating, this can't be happening, this can't be happening.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, when you tell the story, you know, just comes back like you're right there again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That day.
Yeah.
Absolutely. At that point, did some rescue type personnel come? What happened at that point?
Yeah, so we weren't in a very public area of the beach, so it was difficult to, you know, explain where we were. I don't think I got out my phone, but my friend got her phone out and she was trying to tell them, and then she gave it to my sister-in-law. And so, yes, rescue, you know, park personnel, they ended up coming, and then they ended up kind of escorting me away. And I actually went to the cottage, back to the cottage with, and my brother was still there, and I'm not sure who else stayed there. I think one of my nephews. So I wasn't there when the Coast Guard pulled him out.
Yeah.
But back at the cottage, there were other emergency people that were talking to us, you know, and relaying to me and the other few people that were there. And so the ambulance did go by with him with sirens going, and it was like, oh, maybe... Yeah. It just gave me hope, like, oh, maybe there's, you know, but unfortunately, the closest hospital was 40 minutes away. Mm. So I'm praying really hard,
of
you know,
course. Yeah,
because I know that miracles can happen.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was so then we, you know, got to the hospital in Traverse City and then just waited, you know, they worked on him, and obviously they weren't successful. And
sure.
I mean, I figured he had been under too long, you know, by the time they rescued him, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so hard for me to imagine as a mom whose child, you know, went through a prolonged illness. When you know, of course, we prayed for healing and we knew that God could heal her, yet we could see the direction that things were going. And it's so hard for me to imagine, you know, just a fun family outing at the beach. Yeah. Ending in that way. And my heart just goes out to you in that experience. I remember Corbin said something at that beach that day, right? He described that beach. What did he say?
He did, yeah. He said, when we came out of the trail from the woods, I didn't know it at the time. My friend told me later because she was standing next to him taking a picture of the lake. And he said, it looks like paradise.
Mm. Yeah.
And so later I really clung on to that because I just thought how, you know, I don't know if poetic is the right word, but, you know, that he looked at that and said, it looks like paradise, and now he's in paradise. So.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know it's a painful story to tell. You know, as someone who has a surviving child, after Hannah went to heaven, I feel like for someone who loses their only child, that experience must be very different. Will you talk about that? What your experience has been after loss as a mom who has lost her only child?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. You know, I mentioned earlier that me and Corbin's dad, you know, divorced and early in his life. And I think on some level, you know, that was a grief journey for me because I didn't expect to be divorced when I'm just starting, you know, ever. And then when I'm just starting my family. And so my world was really turned upside down at that time. And I didn't know where my life was going to take me, but I had this new life, Corbin, that was the sunshine I needed. And I just, he was my everything at that, you know, just my, I was just so focused on him. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, you know, over the years, the difficulties of having that split family and, you know, just the grief of having your marriage fail and not being the complete family unit that you wanted and thought you were going to have. I often thought of it was like me and Corbin against the world. Like he was my buddy and I was just, you know, that's just one thing I think about. But I, you know, it was difficult to share him over the years with the split family. And, you know, all the things that were hard for me along the way, it was always my intention to do what was best for Corbin. And so I always thought about that. And I just never realized that I also, you know, I had to share him with his dad, but he was also just on loan to me from God. And, you don't really think about that, you know, because it's not natural, you know, to think about possibly losing your child.
Right.
And so that's just been something I've thought about. And, you know, as you mentioned, Corbin being my only child, he's my whole family. You know, I'm single. He's my only child. I have, you know, my brother and his family, but that's, you know, extended, right? It's not immediate, you know, nuclear family. And so everything is really hard. Like I think about, I'll never be a grandmother. I'll never be a mother-in-law. It's like everything is just complicated, you know, in grief by all these extra things that you lose because of losing your only child. Yeah, and Corbin, you know, being that he was 19, he lived with me the whole time. He had not moved out yet, so it was just a really very significant change of not having him here in the house with me, just all the everyday stuff. And it just is it's a lot to adjust to that life alone and wonder, what's my purpose now?
Yeah.
You know, I don't have him here to take care of and to love on and, you know, physically. I mean, I still love him, obviously, and have to be creative in how I do that now, but yeah.
Yeah. I would just think that that would be, well, for me, I still had Bethany to raise, you know, so I had to get up every day and function and do the things that I needed to do and still had other people in my house. And it's hard for me to imagine how difficult that must be when you don't, like you said, what's my purpose now?
Right.
I imagine you went through a probably an extended period of that, of trying to figure out what's next.
Right. Yeah. And I know in the early days, you just like, you can't, I couldn't think too far ahead. I think most grieving parents, you know, feel that really a lot in the early days that, you know, I just had to think, okay, about today or maybe tomorrow, but like, I can't, to think too far ahead was really overwhelming.
Yeah.
Cause I remember it was probably 2 months after I had gone back to the spot where Corbin died and I wasn't sure how it was emotional, but, and I just broke down and my brother was there and I said, how am I going to live the next 40 years? maybe 40 years. I don't know. You know, I was in my 40s and
yeah, sure.
How am I going to live the next 40 years without him? Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, so it is overwhelming to think far ahead. So I was like, okay, I can't. I just need to live in the now right. and like deal with what's in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd always heard that, you know, all my life you hear, oh, well, you just live one day at a time. Mm-hmm. And I do think, you know, and you know, it's easy to kind of dismiss until you've lost a child. And then it truly is one day at a time, sometimes 1 hour at a time, especially
Absolutely.
In the early days.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, I can imagine more so for someone who loses their own only child and then is also single, to where when you come home to that empty house every day, you know, that had to be, I would imagine that that was probably one of the hardest things, was just being in an empty house.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And most of the time I can't have it be quiet.
Right.
You know, I either have to have music on or the TV on or like,
sure.
Yeah, because I miss that. You know, Corbin was big into playing his video games and stuff, and he'd be in the what I called our computer room, and you know, I could hear his games and hear him listening to music, and just all those things that you miss.
Oh, sure, yeah, absolutely.
And cooking for him, even, you know.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to be talking about some of your social media posts in a minute. And I saw one the other day where you just posted something that you had cooked yourself for dinner. And it was, you know, just cooking for one. And I just thought, oh, I didn't even think about that as a mom who, you know, still has a living child and still had a living child at home when Hannah went to heaven, and a husband that, you know, I just think there are so many things about a parent who loses their only child that we're not aware of. And so I appreciate the honesty with which you share those things, because I think
you.
It's eye-opening for so many of us, and gives us more of a compassion for those that have that kind of experience.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate early on in my grief, I did think, okay, how am I going to find somebody who has lost her or their only child and who is single? Like, I felt like mm-hmm. I needed to find those people
yeah.
that had like my exact circumstances, which it is nice to find other moms who have lost an only child. But I know now, going through the journey that I have, that I don't only need to connect with those
right.
people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we can still relate about so many other things.
Right.
After we've lost a child, that's true. And it was not long after Corbin passed away that your mom also passed away. I know that was another profound loss for you. If you don't mind, share a little bit about that with us.
Yeah. Yeah, 2020 was not my year.
No.
My mom had dementia. And it progressed pretty quickly, you know, got worse, you know, about a year before Corbin died. And long story short, about 3 weeks before the COVID shutdown, my brother and I were able to get her into an assisted living facility. And I was just so glad and just felt so at peace, like, okay, she can be taken care of and safe. And but then we had the COVID shutdown, so we were not able to visit her, which I think made things really difficult for her. And she was very confused, and all I could do was talk to her on the phone and try to explain things. So a few months, you know, she was placed there in February, and then when Corbin died, we didn't even tell her, because she was just so confused anyways. I don't think she would have understood, and we couldn't see her in person. After Corbin died, she just ended up kind of declining more, not eating and wasn't getting out of bed. And so they took her into the hospital, and she was in the hospital for a few days and just wasn't doing well. I did go up and see her, even though she wasn't aware or awake. But me and one of my nephews did go up and see her to say goodbye. And a month and 2 days after Corbin died, my mom died. And, you know, it's strange because being the fact that she had dementia, I feel like I was already grieving her, you know, before. grieving the person that she was.
Yeah.
And that whole process is difficult. Mm-hmm. Dementia is a very, you know, dementia, Alzheimer's is a very difficult thing to deal with.
Yes.
And so it's just, but being that, you know, having lost Corbin and then losing her, I remember thinking, wow, she'll probably be surprised to see Corbin up in heaven, you know?
Right. That's so. What I was just thinking. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
But I lost, you know, the two most important people in my life and two people that yes. I cared for, that I yes. like was a caretaker for, you know?
Right. Right.
So again, it's like, okay, I was taking care of Corbin. I was taking care of my mom, you know, before mm-hmm. she was placed in the facility. And then it just feels like, okay, now what?
Yeah, yeah exactly. Kind of coming back to, okay, now really what is my purpose at this point?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you know, the loss of Corbin has been so just overpowering. It's been hard to like, it was hard to really grieve her properly, maybe. I'm not sure. You know, it's just like, I still, you know, I do have moments where I, you know, I think of my mom and I miss her, but it's kind of hard to separate some of that out. And
sure. Yeah. Yeah. Especially when they occurred so close together.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I had forgotten that it was that soon after Corbin went to heaven that yeah. you lost her.
Everybody's like, I can't believe your family's going through this again.
Yes.
You know, and we have such a small family anyways, you know.
Right.
It's just me
right.
and my brother and his mm-hmm. wife and two kids. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as we're recording this episode, we are approaching the 4-year mark since Corbin went to heaven. Think back, if you can, to those very early days of your grief, and that's kind of what we've been talking about. What advice would you give to a newly bereaved parent, especially maybe a mom who has lost her only child?
Yeah. Well, for me, I knew I needed help because yeah. I felt so alone and I was just in, my world was just shook. I knew I needed people. I sought out resources immediately. Like, I have to find support groups. I looked for books, podcasts, therapy, retreats. I was like, whatever could make me feel not so alone.
Sure.
I needed to find my people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Your tribe. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I was desperate to, like I mentioned earlier, I, in those early days, I was desperate to find other people in my situation. That's not always as easy to do to be that specific, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I made connections with people online. So I would say just to try to make connections with other bereaved parents, that would be,
yeah,
it's just so helpful to not feel so alone. And whether that's online or in person, I've met people both ways and have made some really wonderful relationships that way. I'd also say to take time to feel the feelings, just feel the sadness and the,
yeah.
you know, the moments where you just fall to the floor and are crying. And I mean, I did that several times, like on the kitchen floor, you know,
sure.
And you have to like feel those things and they do just come out. You need to get them out, you know, as part of the mm-hmm. process. And I'd listen to songs that Corbin liked, you know, whether sad songs, sometimes just helps get the feelings flowing. And then, you know, another important thing I'd say is just to hold on to your faith, even if it's just by a thread, is what I always say, because there's moments where it really, I'm holding on, but it's...
A thread.
You know, mm-hmm. it's a thread. Yeah. And I know that's so hard and it will go up and down just like our grief goes up and down. And I've had moments where I just really struggle with it, but, you know, it's easy. You can go down that road of pushing God away and isolating from him. But if you can just hold on, I've noticed and seen that he really does have you and he will help you through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, another thing I'd say is just to, you know, like we mentioned earlier, just to focus on one thing at a time, whether that's just getting out of bed and taking a shower.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Small steps.
Yeah, for sure. And if people ask if they can do anything for you, I'd say if you can think of something specific to give them, try to do that. I mean, if you need something from the store, you know, and just tell them to leave it at the front door if you don't want to have any interaction. I think that's just really helpful.
Well, and I imagine, just thinking about you and Corbin living together, him being a 19-year-old, he probably is the one who took care of your yard and all of the outside things. So you probably needed help with that too after he went to heaven.
Right, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Taking out the trash to the road, you know. His chore in our house was vacuuming. And so early on when I had to do the vacuuming, I'd break down crying because should be doing this, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's hard. And a couple other things I would say for advice would be, don't be afraid to put boundaries in place for yourself to take care of yourself.
That's important.
And journaling. Journaling helped me. I think in the first week or two, I stopped at the dollar store and bought a journal just because I was like, I have to start writing. And I started writing in a journal to Corbin, just like getting my feelings out and writing to him, like how much I miss him, how I'm, you know, whatever it is. But that has helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm. I think that's all very practical, good advice for people. So thank you for that.
This concludes the first half of my conversation with Michelle Ferris. Be sure to come back next week as Michelle shares more of her experiences as a single parent who has lost her only child. Thanks again for listening, and I look forward to sharing the rest of our discussion with you next Wednesday.